This is the Grow Your Clinic podcast from Clinic Mastery. We help progressive health professionals to lead inspired teams, transform client experiences, and build clinics for good. Now, it's time to grow your clinic.
Welcome to the Grow Your Clinic podcast. My name is Ben Lynch. In this episode, we speak with Mike Blackwell. Mike is a physiotherapist by trade who started his own clinic in Sydney, Australia, right in the heart of the CBD. He now also works as part of the wonderful team at PhysiTrack. Through the course of our conversation, we discuss how Mike navigated COVID and the very difficult decision to close down his clinic, the conversations with team members, and the leadership lessons on reflection. We also discuss family and juggling a family and a growing business. As a disclaimer, we talk about Mike and his wife losing their son, Joe, at a very young age, and how that has actually been a gift, an inspiration, a catalyst for many of the charitable works that they now do, and how that flows through the meaning in the work that they do now and moving forward. In this conversation, Mike is incredibly open, candid, transparent with his journey. And we all face challenges and adversity on our own journeys. Hopefully, in this conversation, you'll find some inspiration for the story that Mike shares with us. Let's pick up the conversation with Mike. So I guess COVID has been very hard for everyone who's gone through it, in no matter the career, profession, business, life. It was hard. It was hard for you in particular. Tell us a little bit about your story going through COVID as a business owner and where you landed after.
Yeah, sure. So remember the day pretty clearly. I had a physio business in Sydney CBD called Fix Physio, and we'd started in 2014, just me, and we'd kind of grown it over the years up to a team of about seven of us. And we'd reached our quarterly targets. So we'd organized a boat trip on the harbor, you know, get a few beers and a bit of wine going, a few bit of food. And it was that, you know, that fateful Friday when all the, we knew about COVID, but in our little island of Australia, we'd kind of managed to stay pretty unscathed until that point. And then it was, yeah, the news came through on that day when we were on the boat that things were going to start closing down. So I think, like everybody else, you know, a bit naive, oh, this will blow over in a couple of weeks. You know, we've got the budget there and we've got the buffer to cope with that. We'll do a bit of telehealth and that'll tie us over. And I think it was definitely a slow burner to the point of realizing this is pretty full on. This is, you know, and before all the job seeker came in and everything, we obviously had to look at our books and just say, you know, we had to let people go pretty much immediately to cover ourselves, really. Lots of difficult conversations. The team were amazing. They could see the diary. They knew what was going on globally. They were amazing, but it was really tough because, you know, these people were friends as well as, you know, colleagues. So it was really difficult. But I think, you know, gradually we had to let one by one, we had to let team members go. We put a few of the team on JobKeeper. A couple of the team had other jobs that were more suburban based clinics, and they were able to pick up more hours there. So that was good. And then, you know, it kept dragging on. We weren't getting much support from our landlord. There was no rent relief, even though the government were, you know, sort of advising it. And then we reached the point where we had to give up the lease. We had to give up, you know, we'd got this open plan office in 2014. We'd designed it, separated it into rooms, put our own personal touches on it, loved the space. It wasn't clinical in its design. It was very just a nice place to be. We tried to, you know, the music was a big part of it. We always had music going on the big Sonos speakers in the gym. And that was really sad. You know, we built that clinic and we had to actually let it go. We then combined with another physio clinic in the city from a rent perspective. Like, they, similar situation. They had eight staff. They had about 200 square meters of space. And they just knocked on our door one day and said, hey, do you want a room? And it was just like, nice. Yeah, perfect. So, you know, people that were previously, what was it, rivals? I mean, we're all just bunching together. And, you know, I was having a lot of conversations with other clinic owners as to how we could all get through. And And I was with them for about 6 months, and then they had to do the same thing. They had to give up their lease. And then we joined with another clinic, and that was then three big clinics in the Sydney CBD combined, had about 50 years of business experience in the CBD, all working from the same space. And I mean, look, it was a game changer. It kind of allowed us to survive. And it was always that kind of looking to, when is this going to blow over? But I think ultimately, I kind of personally got to the point where I was like, after 2 years, I was, and it not really improving, and it just being me for those 2 years, and having to supplement that with other contract work, working in aged care, I was just like, I think I've had enough, to be honest. I think, so then I started looking. I knew that health tech was was very much an emerging. I knew it was going to be, it was going to be the next thing. You know, we were already early adopters of Clinico, Physitrack, and loved those products and a few others as well. So I just reached out to our mutual contact, Marine, who used to be at Physitrack. He's now at Vold. Yeah, no, great guy. And he wasn't, I didn't know this, but he wasn't at Physitrack anymore. But my email got picked up, went through interview process. And in October last year, I started as part-time, like 20 hours a week, as Physitrack country manager for Australia and New Zealand. So that's where I'm at the minute.
Great evolution, still within the healthcare space, working with a wonderful team at Physitrack. If you take us back to the COVID days, now with hindsight and a bit of reflection, how did it help you evolve as a leader or as a person going through the adversity, the challenges of having to let people go, change where you were located as a business, and all the things that came with it? As you reflect, how did you change? How did you evolve?
Yeah, I think I had to become more resilient. I felt like I was quite resilient beforehand, but I think certainly going through that process has made me a bit, even more resilient. I think, having to have some pretty frank conversations, I think I read a book around that time called Radical Candor. I think it's Kim Scott, it is. And, it was just about just saying it as it is, but with kindness and with empathy, but yes, not skirting around the issue really. And, so I think that was, that was one element. I think the second element was as we always do as business owners, looking at the numbers, like the numbers don't match, and it's then jeopardizing my family financially. Then it's time to make a change, really. As hard as that was, and I remember so many conversations with friends and mentors, and particularly my wife, and is there any way around this? Is there any way that we can make this better? And the reality was there wasn't the foot traffic in the city anymore, and people's habits had changed. Even when people started coming back 2 or 3 days a week, they were planning to do their physio appointments when they were working from home because it was easier. So I think people's habits have just changed, and I hope the CBD comes back to what it was, but I don't honestly know whether it will with the new working habits. I mean, equally, I've been a beneficiary of those different working habits and that working from home now. Yeah. But at the time, it was bloody tough. It was really tough.
For you changing, you'd built your career as a physiotherapist. You'd built a great clinic, obviously going through the challenges of COVID and then coming out the other end. And I imagine to a degree, giving up your profession of physiotherapy. Talk us through some of the conversations you had, or even just the internal conversations you had with yourself, changing and somewhat giving up the profession that you had trained for and built a business around. How was that?
Yeah, I mean, I am actually still working 20 hours clinically currently. So I've for somebody else, we've actually since relocated to Newcastle from Sydney and bought a house here. But I think, for me, we always had a plan with the business. We were 5 years in to a 10-year plan. And I think the plan was pre-COVID, when COVID hit. And the plan was to sell, to ultimately build a business that we could sell. And that would be our family's future. So I think, part one was there was nothing to sell anymore. We didn't have staff. We didn't have a team. We didn't have a location, really. We were just jumping from hiring other clinics, rent, rooms. So I think you know, that was hard. I think, sorry, I've forgotten the question, Ben, actually. Sorry, what was the original question?
Yeah, essentially going from being a physio full-time, having your own business, and then transitioning really out of one business ownership and to, you know, a lesser degree, transitioning beyond just being a physiotherapist or a therapist and embracing a new career. How were the conversations? What were some of the key considerations in making that decision?
Yeah, I think probably number one was finances. We knew that the finances that the business was bringing in, even 2 years after COVID, just wasn't enough to support the life that we wanted. You know, we wanted to buy a house, we wanted to go on holidays, and really, that for a large proportion of those 2 years, it was, you know, earn that money to pay them bills, and you know, not much else really. You know, my wife supported me. Thankfully, she was working full time. She supported me financially for a big chunk of that, which we were fortunate that that was the case. But yeah, the conversation, you know, again, as well, my long-term plan was that I was gradually reducing my clinical time anyway. Before COVID hit, I was reducing from 5 days treating down to two. I'd reduced to 2.5 days. And that was with a goal of, you know, I knew physically, I'm 42 now, I was already starting to feel physically that I couldn't treat, you know, my hands particularly. But, you know, I knew that I wanted to be out of treating by the age of 50, which obviously is thankfully a little while off, but it's, you know, that was the plan. So I think it was just more that plans got moved forwards, I think, more than anything else. But the conversations, I think, were just very factual. Looking at the numbers, we don't have enough money coming in. We need to change something. What can we do? So yeah, it was pretty simple, really.
It's good to be able to come back sometimes when there's that chaos and find a sort of grounding reference point in making decisions using the analysis tools that you have available. The process of reducing your consulting load from full time, so 5 days a week, I think, to about part time, what were some of the things that you did to be able to make that progression? Because it's one that a lot of clinic owners will face in their journey or have faced. What were some of the things that you did to enable you to do that sustainably and, you know, do it well?
Yeah, a few things. I think obviously getting the right people on board is number one, that can take some of that load off you. Also getting the right processes and systems in place, getting the right tech in place to, you know, reduce number of actual person hours to do a task, and, you know, improve efficiencies. And then I think really you always feel like, oh, I can't reduce my hours. I'm my patients need me. You know, and it's so not true, which is a bit of a blow to the ego, perhaps.
Humbling, yes.
Yeah. But I think the biggest thing, like with a lot of things, you know, there's never a right time to do a lot of things, but I think just doing it and then working out the fallout, I think you know, we were confident we had the right people, we had the right processes and systems, we'd got the right tech involved. And then it was just a case of taking that leap of faith. And equally, if it didn't work, I could jump back in. Like, it wasn't like it was a very final thing. Like, there was always that option to jump back in if we needed to. So I think that having that security net there of that, then that was, and, you know, I do think there needed to be a lot of reinforcement around language and the wording that we said to patients. You know, it was all around, if they couldn't get in with me, then, you know, the physio seeing them is an excellent, we always employed physios that were, we didn't employ, because of the stage of our business, we didn't employ physio straight out of uni with little experience. We were employing, you know, I think our three physios were about 10, two of them were about 10 years out, and one of them was about 25 years out. And then there was me, who was 20 years out. So, you know, vast experience in that clinic. So we would say that that physio was experienced. We would say that they would have my notes. We would say that I would do a handover about that patient. And for the more long-term patients, I would sometimes jump into the session right at the start, just give so the patient could see me handing over to the new physio, and then going from there. And not many people, you know, I'd say the majority of people were completely satisfied and happy. So yeah,
that's a really great point. And it is often a humbling experience that, like you said, once people start the process or go through the process, they often have a similar story where you're like, oh, you know, I don't know why I made such a big deal out of, you know, making this progression happen. It sounds like you did it maybe one step at a time, or was it like a half day at a time? How did you go about doing that, or was it an overnight change?
No, it wasn't. It was a gradual thing, and I think that was the way that I was most comfortable with doing it. And you know, might work differently for other clinics, of course. Yes. But for me, we would drop in, yeah, pretty much maybe a half day, I would say, every 3 to 4 months. So it probably took us, you know, close to a year to get down from 5 days to 2.5 days of treating. But yeah, I felt that was a good way to highlight any problems early on, and that seemed to work well for us.
You mentioned there having the right people on board was important in being able to make that transition, and that you had a lot of experience. What enabled you to hire people with experience? Because so often maybe clinics find it easier to get a new graduate or someone early in their career, but they'd really like that experience to bring in-house, whether to be a mentor to some of their juniors or to be able to add that as really an offering to their community and client base. What were some of the things you felt you did well to be able to attract experience to the clinic?
To be completely honest about it, two of those recruits were either people I'd worked with before, or one of them was one of my best friends at university in the UK. He was working with this guy in London. This guy was Australian. He was moving back to Australia. He was like, you guys should get in touch. So two out of the three just happened organically.
Right.
And then the final one was a job advert. So yeah, it was, I would say there was a bit of luck with the first two. But then the final one was the more traditional way. But having said that, you know, we did have adverts out for a long time without much success. You know, we were putting in our adverts 5 years plus experience, because at the stage the business was at, we didn't feel like I had the time and the headspace to really sort of mentor somebody from you know, day one. Obviously that would have been nice from a goal perspective for the business down the track, if we'd have got down the track. But I think, and obviously that would have been beneficial from a salary perspective, because obviously more experience, you've got to pay them more. So that would have been a good from a business model perspective. But yeah, we were pretty lucky with two of them. And then the other one was just the regular route.
It's a good point about tapping into your existing networks as a vehicle to attracting team members. Mm. We all need a little bit of luck, and there's certainly no silver bullet in any areas, in particular recruitment. But I love looking at, you know, what are the vehicles and how well have I done them, and what else might I be able to do? So your current networks and then perhaps a more traditional approach. But what I like as well is, sounds like you're very specific in who you are looking for, you know, someone with 5 years experience or more, no doubt some other criteria. I think that's also useful in recruitment. If you're kind of like, I don't want anyone with a heartbeat and who can, you know, you know, talk or communicate. It's like, well, how about we be a little more purposeful with who we're looking for and resonate with the right people, to come back to your point of the right people. I think that's a wonderful distinction. Being able to add that experience into the clinic as well, I think enables you to deliver a different type of experience for your clients. That's something that I know offline we've spoken about over time, and you've been a big fan of delivering great experiences, being progressive with the technology in your clinic. Give us an insight into what your philosophy, some of the principle you use around creating a great experience in the clinic for your patients, that is.
Yeah, we had a few, really. Like, we wanted to make it, I read some stats somewhere very early on that something like 70% of patients want to book their appointments outside of work hours, as in they physically want to book it. So we knew straight away that we had to get online booking. That was a given. So to make it as easy for them as possible, so we don't miss out on people. But I think what we all also did, you know, again, pre-COVID, is we created a little welcome pack for our new patients. And that was, you know, there was a branded water bottle. There was some discount vouchers for local businesses in there. There was a few other things as well, a welcome letter in there. And that always seemed to resonate pretty well with the, you know, they're like, oh, this is, you know, this is different. I'm not used to getting this from a physio. The music side of things was really important to us. Like, we had all, my wife works at the Opera House at Sydney, and she'd managed to get us some signed gig posters. So we had all, you know, some of the bands that I love, gig posters throughout the clinic, rather than your, you know, anatomy posters or your dermatome posters or those sort of things. Like, we wanted to make it that, you know, we got those sort of things going. The music selection, when we had our Pilates classes, we always asked, there was three people per class, and each week we'd alternate between which person as to what we played. They would decide what we played in the classes. And I think that personal touch, you know, I think we would pick up the phone if there was a problem. We wouldn't shy away from it. We would pick up the phone. Invariably, there are going to be times when things don't go to plan with the treatment plan for a patient. That's just the nature of any medical industry. So we wouldn't shy away from it. We wouldn't hide behind an email. We would pick up the phone and listen. You know, that whole saying of two ears, one mouth, you know, we would listen first and and then, you know, offer whatever we could with regards to a solution with that. So I think that personal touch and that, you know, that community sort of setting, you know, again, we were heavily involved in a lot of different charities as a business, several different charities that we got involved with, and we tried to encourage our patients to get involved with that as well. So yeah, just we kind of felt that was our point of difference. And obviously using things like PhysiApp so that the patients didn't have, you know, the exercise sheets of paper that they couldn't understand the drawing and they lost it between sessions. So yeah, things like that, really.
It's wonderful to look at all parts of the client's journey, all the touch points that we have with them, and how we can optimize their experience in it, as you spoke to a couple of examples there. What I love as well is, and what resonates with the Clinic Mastery community, is creating clinics for good. That's at least our terminology for aligning with the causes that matter to you, and they can be many and varied. And you spoke there to charity. What are some of the charities that matter to you, and have you aligned what you've done, say, in practice with causes?
Yeah, so we've done several. The first one we worked with was an amazing American medical association called the Low Loma Foundation. My wife and I went on holiday to Fiji, I think after about a year of having the business, a much needed break over Christmas and New Year. And the resort that we were staying at were telling us about this amazing foundation where they brought over dentists and doctors and surgeons from the US to Fiji to treat these remote communities that didn't otherwise have access to these facilities. So then post-holiday, I got thinking, I reached out to them and I said, you know, have you ever thought about physio as part of that? Anyway, they were like, well, we have, we just haven't got anybody for it at the moment. So basically, I flew over to Fiji for a week under the Low Loma Foundation sort of banner and opened up a clinic there for a week. And there was an occupational therapist already there. There was a massage therapist already there. So but I took a treatment bed that I was no longer using, like a portable treatment bed that I was no longer using. I took over some stock and some equipment that I knew we could donate and that we needed for that period. And we set up, we worked in the day with patients. And that, but it was so funny. Like, it was literally like the place that I was staying had a ute, and they would drive around the town, say, you know, essentially saying free physio. And then people would jump in the back of the ute and they'd all be there. Like, you know, normally with an appointment, people book their times and they come at their times. Yes. But I'd look out the door and there'd be like 15 people waiting for me. I mean, you know, obviously the last person would probably be waiting a good few hours to see me. And some of them were such simple injuries that they've been putting up with for so many years that literally a bit of basic advice and a bit of basic exercise prescription made the difference. So that was an amazing, amazing time. We'd love to have been able to do a bit more work with it, but they didn't have the funding. You know, I self-funded that original trip through the business, and we'd love to have been able to do more, but we would have needed funded for it. The second one was a charity called Achilles in Sydney. Oh, I think they're Australia-based, sorry, which is basically a running group for people who are visually impaired or blind. And I just went down as a volunteer a few times just to basically, you kind of guide the runners, you go around with them or walkers. And then it just got that I would then go to their, you know, if they were doing a race event as a foundation, I would be their free physio on, you know, for those foundations events. So that was incredible as well. We did a bit of work for November. We did a charity event for Movember. And then the big one really is that we've done some work for the Royal Hospital for Women in Randwick. We've done a couple of big events for them called the 24-hour spinathon. And that is where basically we hired a spin studio, and then there was about 20, 24, 25 bikes. And then we got teams of our friends, of our patients, of corporate contacts that had to keep that their own bike ticking over for 24 hours. And, you know, we raised money. We did that in 2019, and then we did it and raised 185,000. And then we did it again. Wow. In 2022, and we raised another 187,000. I mean, the connection to that story is obviously my wife and I, you know, we had a pretty full on sort of fertility journey, going through a lot of IVF, and my wife had a lot of procedures and treatment, and eventually fell pregnant after 5 years through IVF with our son Joe. We found out pretty early during the pregnancy, about 13 weeks, that Joe had a pretty serious heart condition. But we went through that process, and we got to about 18 weeks to find out whether that heart condition was compatible with life. We saw, because the heart is so small at 13 weeks, it was too difficult for them to say. Yes. Anyway, 18 weeks, the pediatric cardiologist said, yeah, absolutely, he'll need some surgery. But it is, you know, he will survive. He will have a fairly normal life. He may not be an Olympian, but he'll have a fairly normal life otherwise. And then basically, my wife woke up in the middle of the night at 31 weeks. Her waters had broke, rushed into hospital, and our son Joe was born sort of 9 weeks early. He was in intensive care, was in the neonatal intensive care unit for about 5 weeks, 36 days. And the care he received there was incredible. But unfortunately, the combination of his prematurity plus his heart condition just became too much, and he passed away in our arms after 36 days.
Oh, goodness. I can imagine that would have been a really tough time for you, your wife, and your family. And it's wonderful you found a way to contribute to the hospital through the charity work that you've done since then. I'm sure they're really appreciative of the work. Is that something that you've continue to do, and by extension for Joe, and the continuity of his short and lasting impact in your world? Is that something that you still do today?
Yeah, absolutely. We're planning on doing it just ongoing, really. We're actually meeting. So for the first spinathon, the money raised went towards buying a new humidity crib for the unit, and went towards buying a portable x-ray machine. So both of those pieces of equipment have got a little plaque, you know, with Joe's name and his date of birth and all those sort of things. And so that was what the money funded from the first one. For the second one, it's funded about 5 research projects that will help future premature babies. And hopefully, if it stops one family having to go through the heartache that we went through, then it'll all be, you know, all be worthwhile. But I think we're actually meeting the hospital this Friday for them to give us an update on the project. So we're both really excited about hearing, you know, about what the state of the research is at the moment.
How wonderful to be able to have that partnership with them and continue the impact, whether it's COVID and not to say they're in the same camp, but going through that loss, you face some adversity over the last few years. What have you found useful in navigating those periods of time? How have you been able to manage getting through?
Yeah, I think a few things. You know, I'm happy to admit that I, you know, sort of went for counselling, got some help that way. And I think that was a huge help for me. I know it doesn't work for everybody, but I think that was really important for me to be able to talk to somebody without judgment. You know, some of the things that you think of those times, you know, you probably wouldn't want to say to a friend or a family member. I think so that side of things, I think exercise, I think, has been crucial in, you know, getting that endorphin sort of rush and just being healthy. Meditation was something that was important to me as well. Talking, you know, to friends and family, and just, you know, here we wanted Joe's name to be said as many times as possible. You know, we wanted it to be something that, you know, we hear his name all the time. Like, we want to talk about Joe, which is actually a common misconception that a lot of people have around managing grief. You know, a lot of people think, oh, I better not talk about Joe because it'll remind them about Joe.
Yeah.
But Joe's never far from our thoughts. So it's an interesting one. And I think just trying to keep away from that whole, it's not fair. You know, it wasn't fair that Joe passed away. It wasn't fair that our business ultimately failed, or you know, wasn't what it was meant to be.
Yeah,
it doesn't help. So it's kind of that, just you know, keep going and things will work out. One of our family friends talks about, it's something like, if it's not all right in the end, then it's not the end. So it's, yeah, which is a saying that we often say to each other, and we love it. So yeah, and I think, you know, I think I was able to cope with the business loss a lot better having gone through the loss of Joe, because it put it massively into perspective. It was, yeah, okay, we've lost the business, but we've already been through the worst thing you can go through. So when we got through that, so we'll get through this.
It's an incredible perspective. Thank you so much for sharing so openly. I'm sure folks who are listening or watching in, everyone's got their own story and challenges, whether they're going through that now or have been. We'll no doubt will have challenges in the future. So I think that's wonderful to have that insight as to how you've navigated it. I think having support is important, right? Someone to speak to, as you said. As a business owner, you had to show up for your team at the time and ongoing, not just at that time, but all the time. What do you believe have been some key things about your leadership that you know, you're most proud of bringing to growing a team, supporting a team, especially when you are perhaps dealing with these things either privately or publicly?
Yeah, I think a couple of things really. Being honest at all times is crucial. You know, if you try and kid, I mean, that's kind of my modus operandi anyway, like integrity and sort of being honest. But I just think if you do try and pull the wool over somebody's eyes, it will catch you up at some point. Yeah. So being honest, putting yourself in their shoes. My sort of, one of my big life mottos is, you know, treat others as you would wish to be treated. So trying to put myself in their shoes from that perspective, with some of the things that I was coming to them with. And then, you know, sort of leading with kindness ultimately. I think kindness was kind of, you know, that's where I've always kind of led from. And I think I just always being available. I think always being available to, you know, if somebody's got a problem, you know, that they can, they feel the door is always open, and that they feel I will listen and take, and not just listen and then do nothing about it, but if it's appropriate, act on that and, you know, try and help them out.
Some really timeless and important principles as part of that. No doubt you take them wherever you go, whether it's in the charity work that you do with the hospital or whether it's at the clinic that you work at and had built, and now part of the PhysiTrack team as well. I'd love for you to give us an insight into the PhysiTrack team and what it's like to actually work at as part of the PhysiTrack team. We have over time had a wonderful partnership and get to know bits and pieces, but what's it like working as part of a PhysiTrack team?
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, it's an absolute juggernaut. Like it's you know, it's, I think they've gone from 2012, where it was just the two founders, to now they've got globally over 150, a team of over 150. And it was quite overwhelming when I first started. I think just the sheer, and just, you know, Australia is actually one of the biggest markets inbound lead wise for PhysiTrack. And, you know, we wonder why that is the case. My thoughts on it are that, you know, Australian physios and general practitioners are quite tech savvy, are quite tech minded. There's a lot of private practice in Australia compared to some other countries. So yeah, but that, yeah, that was just an interesting thing. But no, I think, you know, I always feel supported. My boss is actually in the US, in Texas. And so we meet, you know, once a week, but we've got the usual Slack channels going on. So he's totally available whenever I need. And he's definitely been one of the working with him has definitely been one of the highlights of being at PhysiTrack. And I just think that collaboration, you know, we've got so many different teams within PhysiTrack. You know, we've got the marketing team, we've got the finance team, we've got the legal team, we've got the sales team. But that, you know, that everyone's got that soul, you know, we're all working together to kind of achieve what we're trying to achieve. And it's amazing what they've achieved. You know, obviously what I thought PhysiTrack was before I started working with them was purely this exercise prescription software. But you know, we've also got the branded apps that we do now for bigger organizations. We've got the data aggregation tool, PhysiData, which, you know, we've done some studies with the APA over the years. A couple of other associations are coming on board soon. And also some of the businesses that they've acquired. You know, they've acquired Champion Health, which is a huge corporate wellness company in the UK. And hopefully that will kind of grow. I mean, it's doing amazing, but it will grow further, and potentially there'll be some involvement from me within that potentially. But they've also bought PhysiCourses, which is like an online education course it was called PT and OT courses in the US. And they're now just about to launch that as PhysiCourses in early May. So watch this space for that. But it's just never ending. Like, you just kind of, you think you know what PhysiTrack is, and then it does something amazing and then adds on to that. So yeah, massive fan, really enjoying working there. Great people and great culture.
And what excites you the most about the future? If you look forward, we've obviously talked a lot about how we got to here today. What is it that excites you either about your physiotherapy, maybe more broadly allied health, and perhaps as well PhysiTrack's role in that vision?
Yeah, I think it's just come so far in such a short space of time. I think, you know, it's difficult to know. I mean, obviously there is business plans, but it's difficult to know where, you know, obviously drop then artificial intelligence into all this scenario. And I think, you know, the allied health and the health tech space is going to be such a different place in 4 or 5 years. I just think you're already seeing like what AI can do. And I think we're only scratching the surface. So I think we're at a period of time that's super exciting for health tech. And that's kind of why I wanted to jump on that train. But I honestly, I could have a guess, but I think it's going to, the next 5 to 10 years, I think health tech as on the whole is going to surprise a lot of people, I think, where it goes.
It is absolutely a buzz right now in the tech industry, how AI is changing things up. Mm. It's exciting, feels a little unknown, like you're saying at the moment.
Yeah, for sure.
It's just wonderful to see that there are these really important points in history. I think this might be one of them with AI and how it helps all of us, from the patient care we deliver to running our practices, running our businesses. It seems like an incredible tool to facilitate change and amplify our impact. So that's great. Well, I've certainly got a wonderful insight into your journey today, Mike. I really appreciate you opening up about it. If people want to get in contact with you or connect with your work, follow up after they've listened to this episode, what's the best way for them to do that?
Probably either through LinkedIn. It's just Mike Blackwell on LinkedIn, or you can email me directly, which is mike.blackwell@physitrack.com. Yeah, either of those channels are probably the best ways to do it, I would say.
Awesome, and very worthwhile connecting. For those Clink Mastery members, you are connected inside our community, inside the Slack channel.
Very privileged, feel very privileged.
So you can reach out into the PhysiTrack Slack channel there, and Mike will be able to help out on all things PhysiTrack and practice ownership. I mean, you've got an incredible experience as well that you bring into the Clink Mastery community as well. We're very grateful for that. Well, thank you so much for your time today. And thank you, folks, for tuning in to another episode of the Grow Your Clinic podcast. All the show notes are over on our website, clinicmastery.com. If you'd like to like, subscribe, give a review, all the wonderful things that allow us to reach more allied health professionals that are looking to amplify their impact and build a clinic for good, we'd greatly appreciate it. Mike, thank you so much.
Brilliant. No, thanks so much, Ben. Really appreciate it.
Thanks. We'll see you on another episode very soon.
Thanks for tuning in to the Grow Your Clinic podcast. To find out more about past episodes or how we can help you, head to www.clinicmastery.com/podcast. And please remember to rate and review us on your podcast player of choice. See you on the next episode.